Hello, I'm Iza Whelan, and this is Iza Whelan Writes, Stories for Adults, where together we are on a journey to discover each other's stories, sometimes the very intimate, the humorous, and the educational. At the beginning of 2020, I started my kind of quest to integrate audio into the things I had written. Audio appealed to me a lot of reasons, not the least of which is when I'm talking into something, I'm making a lot less typos. But I also wanted a male voice to narrate some of my male characters. And in that, I started my search. I just happened to start my search on Literotica, and I put up a post inviting men to read my writing. And one of the only guy who responded was a man named Touch Type on Literotica from England. He and I ended up beginning a email correspondence that has since, it's kind of dwindled to nothing. And I'm very much hoping that he is still okay. I have his email and really no other way to contact him. But he did used to listen to my podcast quite a bit. So Touch Type, if you're out there, I miss you. Please send me an email. In our correspondence between talking about the difference between romance and erotica, I read some of his work, and my review was that I thought it was more of a fun, humorous romp than actual erotica. And he got back to me. He responded, and we did some back and forth. And out of that conversation came his Corona Curio. I love this story for so many reasons. One, it is very silly. It's ridiculous. It is funny. It is over the top. It is very satiric. And it is so very British. I also like it because after talking to him about how women view their own bodies and their comfort level, and especially women who have a little bit of, you know, age on them, like myself, he did some things in the story that tweaked it just a bit and touched me deeply. So not only is it funny to me, it is also touching. And I can't, as raunchy and wonderful as it is, there are points in this story where I actually start to tear up. I was recently having a conversation with some new friends, and Touch Type came up. I don't remember why. I think it's because we were talking humor or something. And I thought perhaps maybe I would repost the audio that he sent me for this story. It's in two parts, and this is part one of Touch Type's Corona Curio, The Throbbing Member.
Corona Curios, The Throbbing Member, by Touch Type, Part 1. Of course, like most blokes my age, I'd only one overriding concern, sitting at home at the end of week one of my isolation, watching things deteriorate worldwide. The blustering leaders, who only days before had been dismissing all worries and concerns, we're now playing catch-up, big time. Money, the primary concern of nearly all of them, was being promised in huge amounts to any legitimate science business or snake oil grifter who looked like they'd got a plausible formulation which could be passed off as a miracle cure. That, of course, was all very well for the plastic clone newsreaders, the balding commentators in ill-fitting suits, and the vox-popped interviewees, all elderly, spoken to over Skype. But for the rest of us, the younger and fitter, and even if already middle-aged, what about us? What was being done to get us the answers to that constant, nagging concern our only concern. Would we ever get laid again? For me, the whole ordeal started by accident. My own fault again. I'd been visiting my neighbour the night before. Nice old boy. Bit lonely, and certainly went on too much about the old days. There are only so many times you want to hear about all the Grateful Dead gigs there ever were. Am I right? You know I am. What redeemed him, though, was his stock of primo homegrown grass. He'd got a great setup. A foil-lined wardrobe held a hydroponic system warmed by ultraviolet tubes. Two or three healthy plants at a time gave him a crop big enough for himself and a couple of his mates. The only problem was the seeds. He complained every time I saw him that the modern hybrids were always more harsh than the ones he'd used in his youth, even though the buzz was so much stronger. I thought about his words as I coughed my way to the office the next day, throat sore and head still a bit fuzzy. I wandered over to Gloria, our receptionist, like I did every morning. An accommodating girl, our Gloria. Her seat, set low behind the reception desk by an interior designer with a breast fetish, guaranteed a decent view down her cleavage. She did her bit by keeping at least the top three buttons on the company-issued blouse permanently undone. I wasn't the only guy who liked to start their day with a good look down the cleft between those double Ds while ostensibly checking to see if there's any urgent mail. How was I to know that Corona Steria had struck the company overnight? Turns out someone in one of the satellite offices had had to be tested after going down with the right symptoms. By the time the negative result came through, it was too late. WhatsApp group were abuzz from the start with scaremongering. Desperate idiots went on and on about how they'd met her at a company retreat 6 months before, and should they be tested too? In turn, their contacts started worrying. Everybody couched their concerns in terms of wanting to protect children or elderly parents. The colleagues at her home base were in full funk mode. I was about to ask Gloria out for a drink after work, like I did most mornings, when the coughing fit started. By the time I got back from soothing it at the water cooler, it was already too late. My boss shouted at me from behind his half-open plate glass door that I should go home immediately and stay there for a week. I laughed. I genuinely thought he was joking. When I stepped towards him to explain more privately why I'd been coughing, he slammed his door shut. I heard Gloria cry out and saw her emerge from behind his back. I turned to try and find someone more sensible, but the situation was already beyond salvaging. You'll have seen the summer videos with CGI viruses bouncing from one person to another with a classical requiem playing in the background. Corona Steria spread through the office like that too. People around me grabbed anything they could to clamp over their mouths and noses. The cleaner's old rags went instantly. Loose paper and company advertising leaflets were crumpled up and pressed into service. One of the girls started tearing at the bottom of her blouse. They all had to wear the flimsy garment, opaque enough to be arguably decent, but thin enough to display the clear outline of underwear, especially when the light shone through the wall-to-ceiling office windows. She was soon naked from the waist up, as desperate colleagues shredded her top for protection of their own. Two guys from the post room were pulling at her purloined bra, each wanting a rose-embroidered B-cup virus protector, clearly sized to cover mouth and nose. In minutes, I was alone. Muffled shrieks were of women fleeing me or desperate mask hunters seeking to divest them of their clothes. The slamming of office doors and the scraping of desks pressed into service for makeshift barricades echoed around. The poor cleaner, an elderly woman of Middle Eastern origin, she and I had always been cordial in the past. She cowered in a corner, too lowly to be allowed access to an office. She hid behind a trolley and waved an aerosol of proprietary wood polish in my direction, like it was some kind of military-grade tear gas. My boss had taped up a hastily scrawled note, advising they'd email me work I could do at home. Gloria, so obviously grateful he'd stepped up to save her from me, she was on her knees sucking at his dick like a congregant waiting for communion. My last work image was of them both toppling to the floor as he overstretched, trying to reach the button which would change the Venetian blinds to screen. I thought about what had happened on the bus on the way back home. It was good to get out into a saner world. I did notice that no one was sharing seats, later passengers preferring to stand if there were no double benches free. But conversation was lively as pensioners using their bus passes swapped tales about the war and Blitz spirit, unfazed by the fact that none of them were old enough to have actually experienced it. I called in at the supermarket to stock up on whatever essentials were still available. The only evidence of hoarding I witnessed was a middle-aged woman who barged me out of her way when she spotted a checkout was free. She was clutching 6 large boxes of chocolates to her chest and swinging a basket containing nothing but 2 smaller ones. Clearly a woman on a highly tailored diet, I thought. Probably something medical. So by the time I got home, I was feeling pretty good about being forced out of the office. Watery sunbeams were shining through the almost clean windows onto the bald patches on the carpet I never normally saw because of the times of day I was there. I ate a sandwich, tried to listen to the radio. The banality of the news was on a par with the music the over-enthusiastic DJs were playing on other channels. I decided to see what TV had got to offer. If anything, it was worse. The Botox-frozen bonhomie of the daytime hosts gave the same degree of trivial inconsequentiality to all the stories they covered, be they mass deaths in China or the prospects of various football teams in games destined never to be played. There's nothing for it, I decided. I'd have to log on to my computer and see what work wanted me to do. Nothing. Or, to be more accurate, absolutely nothing. I emailed my manager, copied in HR in case he'd forgotten to tell them I was not allowed back on the premises, and checked in once an hour for the next 24. You won't need me to tell you what happened next. A man on his own, with an open laptop in front of him, and nothing on any other media to distract him. Does anyone ever start binge-watching Netflix epics during daylight hours? It was a non-stop porn marathon. I watched everything I could think of. Strippers, bored housewives, girl next door popping in on the flimsiest of pretexts. I watched so many pickup clips from Eastern European capitals, I was beginning to recognise many of the major tourist sites. Threesomes, foursomes, gangbangs, you name it, I watched it. I watched until my eyes ached. My underpants had crackly, overlapping stains from dried pre-cum, and I'd produced about half a basketful of used tissues in the waste bin brought back for me, appropriately, from my brother stag do in Prague. When I retired that night, my willy was tender. I winced as I pulled on the lounge pants I customarily wear for bed and slept with both arms outside the covers like a guilt-ridden schoolboy in a Victorian morality tale. I woke the next day feeling thoroughly relaxed. The world was not. Somewhere overnight, someone in the government machine had persuaded the frontman for the alt-right who was running the show here that he had a real crisis on his hands. Gone were the half-baked stories about our country's exceptionalism. In was a new line about measures to contain, control and combat. El Supremo was always a big fan of three-word slogans. I'd made an effort to get properly dressed that morning, but for reasons of penile comfort, I'd forgone the tightness of trousers and kept the loungers on. I was still sitting there, hopping news channels and periodically checking in with work when my stomach told me it was lunchtime. I made a healthy salad from the fresh produce I'd brought the day before. There was no press at that counter, and was feeling righteous enough to follow it with half a packet of custard creams. More news followed. Work finally checked back to confirm what I'd long suspected, that I knew more about the mysteries of the black keyboard than anyone else there. No one could master giving me access to the company server, and there was misplaced triumphalism in the tone of the memo announcing that everyone on my team should copy me in to emails using my home address. It took approximately 10 minutes to acknowledge and comment on 2 days' work output. I turned back to my laptop, determined to continue the unfolding drama of the news. I'd have succeeded too if it hadn't been for Literotica. The innocuous ping of an arriving email turned my mind to work once more. That it was an update from Lit on the latest forum discussion I'd been following, I found timely. There'd been nothing really new to report, and the repeat of the same basic announcements in more and more stentorian terms was no longer doing it for me. I checked out the window a few times to see whether there were mobs with pitchforks and flaming torches in the street, that it's always best to be in the mob looking out than outside looking dodgy to the respectable citizenry has always been one of my ruling nostrums. The forum led me to checking in with new stories, and after that I was lost. Hunger drove me to eat well after 9 o'clock. Then it was back to checking on my favourite authors. My bin was now full and tissues more greased by hand lotion than sperm littered the floor around it. I was almost crying every time I touched myself, but I just couldn't help it. Some of that stuff there is really hypnotic. By midnight, I knew drastic action was needed. My logic, if logic it was that if I watched a few minutes of a 1970s porn movie, one of those with a story, I'd soon get bored and drop off to sleep. Schoolboy error. The sight of an unshaven pussy and an innocent's journey, well, that it took that long, from new in the city to nympho party girl, drew me in and held me captive. I fell into bed in the early hours and very quickly had to turn over to give myself the merest chance of sleep. The next 2 days were a blur. I didn't go out and only had 2 knocks at my door. My neighbour downstairs and a delivery guy from the supermarket with an order I couldn't remember filing. The old guy came to cancel our evening session. He told me he was in the government advised isolation category, and whilst he wasn't too worried, he did think sharing spliffs was out. When I told him what had happened at work, he laughed at first, but returned later with a bag of grass and said he hoped it would make up for the inconvenience he'd caused. I know I was dealing with work because I kept getting emails thanking me for my contribution. I was eating too, but mostly toast with stuff smeared on it. I even made myself follow the news by setting alarms for the main bulletins, which I could only silence by exiting whatever erotica I was enjoying at the time. But aside from that, I couldn't tell you what was happening. I'd run out of hand lotion, and the second of the 2-for-1 bumper packs of gentleman-sized tissues was getting worryingly low. My attitude towards kitchen roll has always been conservative, and the increasingly strident newscasts were telling me that I needed all I had for wiping surfaces of every description. So worried was I about my dwindling stock of essential supplies, I ventured outside, in baggy shorts, in the rain. It was a fruitless journey. Neither supermarket nor corner convenience store nor even the local chemists had anything in paper with a quasi-medical function. There were desperate people everywhere. I even spotted one old boy checking the small print on female hygiene products to see whether they might be pressed to perform whatever need he was thinking of. Younger customers were openly discussing whose responsibility it might be either to drive this potential disease magnet back to his own home or, preferably, to the local cop shop where strong bars and indifferent constables would prevent such a peripatetic outrage in the future. I returned with a bag of inessential sweets, cigarette papers and an inappropriate T-shirt bearing the slogan, "My mum went to Wutan," and all I got was a persistent cough. Not work wear, obviously, but definitely work-at-home wear. I'd also picked up a possibly useful piece of self-care advice from scrutinising the labels on the bare cosmetic shelves in all three outlets, to wit, aloe vera. Now, I'm not an aloe vera expert, but I did know it was a common ingredient in many soothing and even medicinal lotions. Thank you, the descriptive brand names behind which the "with aloe vera" label worked its magic. Admittedly, I'd been unable to track down anything promising to relieve a burning hot male appendage, but my research had taught me that just about every other body part was covered. I also knew they actually owned an aloe vera plant. It was actually sitting on a back windowsill of my flat, right next to the kitchen sink. A birthday gift from one of my sisters. The last I'd looked, it was thriving despite my careful ministrations. I'm a strong believer in the school of pot plant maintenance, which advises placing the offending flora near a light source and chucking the dregs of almost finished coffees on them if they catch your eye and look dry, withered or desiccated. We don't have a high success rate, admittedly, but my aloe vera seemed to be thriving. 15 minutes of the fastest bow-legged stumbling I could manage later, and I was gently holding my cock by its base, looking from it to the leather-leafed, spiny succulent, and contemplating my next move. One thing was for sure, that thing was never going to get near my throbbing member. You can imagine how I laughed some weeks later when, able at last to bring myself to access non-erotic sites like Wikipedia or YouTube, I discovered how close I'd been to an almost limitless supply of natural soothing gel. In the meantime, there was the issue of my throbbing member. There, I said it again. It was scarlet red. I couldn't but notice it was dropping dry flakes of dead skin. It looked to me like it was pulsing in time with the snow. The only thing which stopped me calling an ambulance and demanding an investigation of an as-yet undiscovered auto-infected STI was the fact that it didn't hurt when I passed urine. Throbbing member. Literotica cognoscenti will already be aware is a descriptor used almost invariably to be followed by hotted-up action culminating in penetration, orgasm, eruption, and long moments of blissful satisfaction. I was a very long way from that, but mere moments from a practical solution which had eluded me now since getting up some hours before. I was mentally calculating how long it would take, were I to dip said member into a cup of cold water, before the liquid would be hot enough to take a tea bag and provide a satisfying beverage. When? Eureka! That was it. I laughed out loud when I realised the solution that had been there all the time, staring me in the face. The cold tap. My kitchen was not state-of-the-art by any means, but it was highly functional and met my every need. I had a washing machine, a dishwasher, and a top-of-the-range coffee machine, all of which were already plumbed into the mains. So married to my lifestyle was the kitchen that I couldn't remember the last time I'd actually used the sink. But there it was, the mixer tap with retractable nozzle and two lever pull controls, one for hot and magical, wonderful cold. I double-checked to make sure I remembered which side controlled which, found a small stool in a corner where I'd left it after abandoning a belated attempt to remove ceiling cobwebs, dropped my shorts, pulled out their flexi-hose, and hello, Nirvana. I've no idea how long I stood there. It was definitely several minutes. For all I knew or cared, it could have been hours. Most of the time, I had my eyes closed, concentrating my every sense, my every tingling nerve ending, on the ecstasy of relief which was flowing through my body in waves. For some time, the predominant, nay, only feeling was the pleasure of the instant ending of pain and the slow but steady diminution of the underlying ache around the joint between my shaft and the uncircumcised head of my cock. Then I enjoyed the tingling joy as stray drops and trickles from the icy jet caressed my balls, the shrinking of my sack and the reduction in length of my already flaccid dick followed, each development bringing more relief to my anxiety. An interesting counterpoint to every man's seldom articulated concern with length, girth, and all things mega where their own penis was concerned. I found myself thinking of all the scenes I'd read over the preceding days of women pleasuring themselves in warm showers, often using steaming jets of power to get themselves off. I knew I was never going to come, but in that moment I could think of no higher enjoyment than I was getting in the here and now. I laughed at the absurdity of the idea, then took to playing the spray over and around my genitals, as if to underline the concept. It was the steady trickling of cold water down my thighs as a result of my over-exuberance which finally made me open my eyes, prior to bringing the treatment to an end. I remember I had a fleeting thought about checking out hunks and babes having sex in swimming pools on my favourite porn site, a particular scenario I was sure I hadn't tried yet. When I lifted my head, and things got even better, I saw her for the first time. Melissa.